Monterey Peninsula Unified School District serves five distinct communities along Monterey Bay in Southern California. As the COVID-19 pandemic forced this coastal school district to move to remote learning, district leaders in Monterey focused on how best to support their students, families, and teachers. The district implemented a number of strategies, including adopting standards-based learning, creatively connecting with families, and deepening partnerships with local nonprofits. In this episode of the Learning Accelerators What Will We Take With Us Leadership Podcast series, we're going to hear from a district leader at Monterey Peninsula Unified School District about what they tried, what they learned, and what they're taking forward as they head into 2021. Superintendent P.K. Diffenbaugh shared with us some background on his district and his role.
Sure. So P.K. Diffenbaugh, Superintendent, Monterey Peninsula Unified School District on the central coast of California. How I like to explain my district is most people think of Monterey Peninsula, they think of Pebble Beach and, you know, the beauty and the wealth that's concentrated there. And we certainly have the beauty in our district, but we are not a wealthy district. So we serve about 68% of our kids who qualify for free reduced lunch, predominantly Latino population. The tourist industry is the biggest industry. And so a lot of our parents are working in the hotels, in the restaurants, in the kitchens. We have around 18%. So around 1,800 kids are considered homeless in a McKinney-Vento definition. So it doesn't mean they're all in shelters or motels, although many are. But they're doubled up, they're tripled up. And that's how families have, you know, been able to make it in a place that's very expensive to live, is by doubling and tripling up. So our kids pre-pandemic were overcoming tremendous obstacles. And I think the pandemic just really exacerbated that.
Monterey Peninsula is a suburban district in Monterey, California, serving roughly 10,000 students across 21 schools. 56% of the student body identifies as Latine, 20% as white, 6% African American, 6% Asian, 5% Filipino, and 3% Pacific Islander. Two-thirds of students are considered socioeconomically disadvantaged, while nearly 35% are emerging multilinguists, and 11% receive special education services. MPUSD seeks to become one of the finest public school systems in the country, one that serves all students well and engages each student in deep learning that prepares them to solve the challenges of the 21st century. As schools across the globe move to remote teaching and learning almost overnight, and in-person opportunities for instruction were put on hold, teachers and leaders at Monterey Peninsula were encouraged to try new, innovative practices that would allow for the quickest return to in-person teaching and learning. One such innovation was a shift to standards-based grading.
I'm optimistic about our shift towards standards-based grading, and I think that the pandemic really showed that our traditional system of grading was punitive and causing many kids to fail. And we took a hard look at that, and we really worked with our staff beyond just kind of the core group that were interested in it. It forced us really to push all our staff to really look at grading practices. And so I think we're going to take a significant step forward. We were able to reduce our F rate by about 60% from quarter one to when it's semester, you know, gets on the transcript, you know, and, you know, in transparency, like we're back at square one now where a lot of kids are failing, right? So we didn't change the mindset yet around it, but I think we've changed some of the practical applications of how we grade in a way that I think that gives me hope for kind of long-term transformation or, you know, getting some momentum around that. So yeah, I think that's one area. You know, another area that I think has been a little bit surprising.
Monterey Peninsula has also been focused on teaching essential standards as a way of encouraging breadth over depth. Here, Superintendent Diffenbaugh reflects on how teachers rose to the occasion and executed this in a virtual environment.
You know, this was just not revolutionary or anything, but we've been really emphasizing like depth over breadth, like since forever, you know, and like really trying to tell teachers, you know, you don't need to cover all this. Let's just focus on kind of the essential standards. I think what the pandemic has done has really forced a lot of teachers to move in that direction and by necessity. So that I'm hopeful for. And we've, you know, done some work on, you know, identifying those and helping teachers to understand how to teach towards mastery of a few standards rather than trying to cover everything. And so I think that that can serve well. I'm hopeful that every teacher was able to teach virtually, some a lot more effective than others. But we, prior to the pandemic, we'd have teachers that, you know, logging onto email was kind of a challenge. And now they're doing it, you know, again, at different degrees of effectiveness, but I'm hopeful about that. You know, I think that that shows, I guess the way I thought about it was, you know, we talk a lot about a belief gap around students. And I think that's true. You know, we do have a belief gap around what certain students can do, but I also think we have a belief gap around teachers and what teachers are capable of. And I think that this really forced us to take this leap that we would have never taken and never thought we could have done. And I think, to me anyways, it shows that it can be done, you know, and sometimes it's because you have no other choice. But, you know, I think that at times we underestimate what people can do. And this was certainly one, you know, I mean, if you had told me a year ago that every kid would be engaged in online learning from 8:30 to 12 every day, I would have been like, there's no way, you know, there is absolutely no way. But we're doing it. You know, we don't have packets of paper going home and stuff. Like, we're doing it all online. And our attendance rate is very high, higher than when school is traditionally open in a lot of cases. Yeah.
So how did Monterey Peninsula gain such a high attendance rate? Much of it boils down to flexibility and connection, a focus on outreach to students who need support by shifting the capacity of district personnel in new and creative ways.
I would love to say it's because our lessons are so engaging, that kids are so excited, you know, that type of thing. I don't think it's that. I think, honestly, I think that sometimes our families are dealing with a whole lot, that kind of managing the process to get to school sometimes it is difficult. And it's kind of like, okay, we just can't do that today. You know, whereas now, you know, a kid can go to the couch and turn on their computer and be in class. So I think that's a lot of it. I also would say at the high school level, our follow-up and kind of systems of support have gotten so much stronger during the pandemic, because we've had classified staff that would have been doing campus monitor jobs or family liaison jobs and being kind of sucked into the day-to-day of a school day. Now they're making home visits, they're making calls, they're following up in ways that I think have been really effective. And they've had the time to do that, where I think, you know, during a normal school day, they would be busy doing lots of other things. So I think that contributes to it as well, in terms of, like, when you really look at your attendance, it's really a core group of kids that are driving you down to 95%, you know, It's really just a core group that are missing a ton of school. And so I think this has allowed us in a way to focus on that core group in a different way than we've had previously. And then the other thing that we put out, I read this in the tweet, but this one guy, I don't even remember, but he had like these series of like values or whatever. But one, he said, care before content. And that became like a thing for us, you know, and really trying to emphasize to, and I find it strange that people need permission to do that, but I felt like they did, to be able to emphasize care over content or before content. And so that was certainly something that became a theme and common language across the district. And now I get it kind of thrown in my face, like, I wish that the district practiced care before content with its teacher, you know, like stuff like that. But it's like, it's part of
successful communication of a value that people are now interpreting.
It's part of the language, you know, which is great. And I do think, you know, I mean, honestly, I don't think our kids got a great education through this experience, but I do think they had people who cared about it throughout. And, you know, that's good.
Another key part of Monterey Peninsula's pandemic response involved deepening and expanding partnerships with community organizations. Superintendent Diffenbaugh described for us the impact of those partnerships.
The way we responded to the pandemic, particularly like right away, was, to get our kids computers right away, partnered with the food bank and did a lot of kind of weekly food deliveries and food distribution. We were partnered with an internet company to get internet installed in families' homes if they needed it. So I do think we created this environment right away. Like, look, this is a global pandemic and we've got to respond. And so I do think that people kind of bought into that and felt like, okay, whatever needs to be done, I'm going to do. We were able to form much stronger relationships, right? So like the food bank, huge partner. Now we do twice a week food runs through our campuses. And then I think you guys wrote about this a little bit, but we had these, what we call a community cares program, where for about 200 of our students who are McKinney-Vento students, they're actually, through a partnership with the Boys and Girls Club, YMCA, and a nonprofit called Community Partnership for Youth, they've been on campus since September, you know, and it's a collaboration with them. It's on our campuses with their staff, and we're contributing towards paying their staff. And then our kids who really needed it were able to have a caring adult with them from 8 to 5, similar to those hubs that you mentioned. We already had the partnerships, but it was more like we were two different organizations, right? It's like, and then the kid goes to Boys and Girls Club. What they do there, I don't know. I think it's probably good, you know? And now we're much more like we're a team, right? You know, we approach the work as a team. The communication is much better. The follow-up's much stronger. So I think that will definitely continue. We're already talking about summer school, for example, and we got a bunch of money to do extended school year and all that. But how do we do something similar where kids are in person with their teacher for 3 hours and then the community group kind of takes over and does extension activities? And I just think that model, while we could have done it before, it wouldn't have been kind of a coherent approach, right? It would have been like, here's your time. Now you're going to this organization and they're doing something with you. And now I think it's going to be much more coherent around what the kids are doing. I think there's still a significant amount of work that needs to do to build the capacity of their staff to serve our students, you know, in a more targeted approach, both academically and social emotionally. A lot of the staff are recent high school grads who, you know, care a lot about kids, but, you know, may not be trained in some of the ways. So I think there's things that we can do also, but overall it's been super positive and I'm super appreciative, because I think for me, I felt like I was actually telling the CEO of the Boys and Girls Club, this is like, you know, it's been a hard year for me to just like emotionally, you know, like we're not doing enough for our kids. Right. And they're really suffering, and hindsight's always 20/20, but maybe I could have done more to push for kids coming back and take that on, you know, and did I not do enough? But I was telling him, it was like, I can go to bed knowing that at least for those 200 kids who are the most vulnerable, they're around a caring adult with the food, with the support every day. And that makes me feel like, okay, that was a success, you know, in a really hard time. And so that feels good, you know, and it wouldn't have been possible without them, because we didn't have the staffing who was willing to do it, frankly, and their staff was willing to step up.
Shifting attention to families, another area that Superintendent Diffenbaugh and his team focused on in their pandemic response was enhancing parent engagement.
So we do the parent town hall once a month too. And, you know, we have hundreds of parents tuning in and participating. And I think part of that obviously is they want information about coming back to school, about safety measures we're taking. But in a normal year, we would do an LCAP presentation and have 10 parents, if we were lucky, show up to the district meeting. Now we're getting hundreds through the technology and Zoom. So I think that's parent engagement. While we still have a long way to go, I think are going to create ways long-term where if a parent doesn't have to drive to school and, you know, go to the library and they can just tune in at home, I think we're going to be able to leverage that for more parent involvement.
Given that a majority of students in Monterey Peninsula identify as Latine, with more than a third of all students identified as emerging multilinguists, often referred to as students who are learning English, English language learners, or ELLs, Monterey Peninsula was particularly strategic in how they worked with Spanish-speaking families.
The majority of our, I don't know about the majority, we have a lot of Spanish-speaking families in the home. And so we did these, when the town halls, we either did them side by side or we did English then followed by Spanish. Mm-hmm. We didn't get as many participants as the English town halls for parents, but they were pretty effective in the sense that I think people felt like we were really trying to communicate directly to them. They could ask their questions. My assistant superintendent, human resources, is just a very powerful connector, you know, has a shared lived experience as many of the families. I can speak a little Spanish, which they appreciate me trying. So, you know, I think it was a way that they felt like we were honoring them and trying to bring them in to the discussion. But I do think the technology for some is a little bit more of a barrier. And then obviously the working at nights, you know, is pretty common among many of our families.
Yeah.
So we did a morning one time. We got a few people, you know, that type of thing. But yeah, I think we have a huge opportunity to engage our Latinx families. We have a long way to go in that regard. Long way to go. I guess one thing is, that we would do is we really communicated strongly about the resources that were in the community, whether it was the food bank, whether it was homeless solutions, connecting people. We arranged for flu clinic. We had drive-by testing for COVID, you know, things like that, that I think, and we really, everything was English, Spanish, and we were pushing it out strongly to our families. So, you know, a lot of the parents, when they chimed in, our families are just very respectful, you know, and they, a lot of it started with thank you for what you've been able to do and listing the specific things, you know, whether it was a clothing drive we did or whatnot that they took part in, and then ask their question or make their statement. So I think we were successful in them feeling support from us. I do think we were really successful in that.
As we closed out our conversation, we asked Superintendent Diffenbaugh what he's excited about for the future.
So I guess I'd say, like, between the money that the state has allocated and the rescue plan that Biden, you know, just passed, like, we're going to have like $20 million to spend within a year and a half to 2 years on, quote unquote, you know, learning loss, which I don't, you know, we try to use the term like unfinished learning or and support. And so we have long operated in like a resource strapped system that is like trying to make things work with not enough resources. And California is really, really troubled in the way that they finance schools. And I think that this is going to be one of the first times where we actually have the resources to do something really creative and special and different. And so I'm excited about, like, what does that look like? I don't, you know, I don't want it to be like, oh, okay, you know, every teacher gets 3 hours of tutoring they can do, you know, like, I don't want to do that. I want to do something different. And I don't know exactly what that's going to be, but I think we're going to have the resources to do it. So that's really exciting to think about that. You know, I'm excited about, we've talked about launching this new school, this like new independent study school that is, you know, part online, part in person. And then I think that it started before the pandemic, but I think that we've really tried to emphasize student voice a lot. And some of the things that our kids have been able to do during this has been really also awesome. And I'm looking forward to, like, how do we continue to leverage that? Like, during Black History Month, we have an equity leadership team district-wide, and Black History Month, they organized this like whole day of community leaders coming in to speak to a whole bunch of our students. Mm-hmm. And it was like totally student-run, student-driven, like we helped. But yeah, we have an equity leadership team of students across campus that has just kind of grown and evolved organically. I think there's been some hope that's come through this, you know, like we're doing our drama is doing The Outsiders and like some other play. We're literally there, like we bought them a stage and they're having cars like drive up to the stage in their cars, you know, and are going to be sitting in their cars. And they figured out a way where the mic goes to the radio. Right. And so like you turn on the radio, it's like a drive-in theater. I guess what I'm saying is I've always said, like, if our schools seem like school, we're not doing it right. It shouldn't seem like school. And there's like glimpses here and there of stuff that's happening that like doesn't seem like school. You know, it seems really different, innovative, neat, fun. And I'm excited to see, like, can we grow and expand that? You know, like a lot of the elementary schools did like STEAM night, where they sent home like a STEAM bag, and the parents and the kids and the principal and teachers through Zoom are all like working together on a STEAM project. The parents was, awesome. It was like awesome for the parents to be with the kids. And I'm like, that could be real, real school. You know, there's no reason why like our real school has to be like, drop off your kids and then we teach them, we send them back. So I that's what I guess I get excited about, is like there are glimpses of that happening, and with people feeling maybe more confident or more like it's allowed, you know. I mean, that's what's crazy, is a lot of people think like I'm not allowed to do this, and we're just like, yeah, you can do it. And so I think there's maybe more permission. So those are the things I think I'm probably most excited about.
Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, nearly every school across the country had to quickly pivot to allow for new models for teaching and learning to reach students in remote settings. Dealing with circumstances never before experienced, Monterey Peninsula focused on support for critical stakeholders, emphasizing collaboration and transparency to ensure that students, teachers, and families were set up to navigate this unprecedented year. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Learning Accelerator's What Will We Take With Us Leadership Podcast Series. For more resources and leadership stories, visit hopskipleapfrog.org.